Welcome to Power, Strength and Vulnerability, the Mental Health Podcast. It's time to make mental health a normal conversation with your host, Shane Kelton.
All right, welcome to another year of Power, Strength and Vulnerability, the podcast. It's been a big couple of months where I spent a month in hospital for my mental health, which you all would have heard about in December, but we're back online now and ready to go. And while I was in hospital, I actually came across my next guest post and reached out to her. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi.
Sarah loves chatting and I love chatting, so this could go for 3 hours. No, we'll try and keep it brief.
Definitely.
So Sarah is 23 years of age.
Yeah.
You love fitness.
I do. Yeah.
What else do you love?
I do a lot of ninja-y stuff, and then I have been a gymnast my whole life. I also have done a bit of work with Headspace and Beyond Blue before too, because obviously my passion is towards mental illness after suffering from it for a while. Yeah.
I didn't actually know you did that stuff with Beyond Blue. So
yeah.
I'll ask, what did you do with Beyond Blue?
So about 4 years ago, I did a charity ball and it was called Beyond Ball.
Yeah.
And we raised $10,000 for Beyond Blue. It was after one of my close friends passed away, and then it was just like a ripple effect where there was a lot of suicides especially that kind of came from it. So we decided to run an event that we could raise funds to try and help as much as we could.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
It is.
That's a lot of money for someone to organise. Now,
yeah, it was my first one as well. It was big. I cried a lot.
I completely understand that, having organising a career game at the moment.
Yeah.
So I'm actually going to read this post out that I printed it off. I stalked, went back and found it and printed it off, because I want to give the listeners just, I guess, the reason behind why I reached out to you. And I had kind of been following you a little bit before that anyway, because of the ninja stuff.
Yeah.
And just the fun you have, which I'm sure we'll talk about later on. But this was a post Sarah did last October-ish.
Sounds right.
Ish. Today I'm updating everyone on my mental health. Some know, some do not. You might cry here.
No, it'll be fine. Yeah.
For the last 9 months, I've been suffering from anxiety-driven depression. I've been in complete denial of my state of mind, and I've done everything in my power to avoid it. About 2 months ago, I had a few doctors and hospital visits after reaching my breaking point. I had my friends, family, doctors, and psychologists terrified for my safety. After a long few days, I was put on 24-hour care as a condition of me leaving hospital. This meant that my family and friends then had the stress of being with me night and day to make sure I was safe. The reason for this post is to explain something to everyone. I may have been distant or not replied to messages in this time. I promise it wasn't just you. I may have missed a lot of work and affected my own business, but I promise it wasn't just one job. I may have seemed fine when you had seen me, but I promise I wasn't. I'm not sorry for trying to find the girl in this picture and having to remove myself from situations I couldn't be strong enough for. I'm not sorry that I couldn't support some of you when I could barely hold my own shoulders high. I am, however, sorry for getting to this point I was at. I'm sorry for making people worried, and I'm sorry that it's taken me a while to be able to start to get on track again. Thank you to all my babysitters. In brackets, I call them that to try and make light of the situation, and those who call to check on me daily. Your support isn't and never will be forgotten.
Yeah.
What does that bring up for you?
It's kind of just like a nice little reminder for me that how far I've actually come. Yeah. Like, it's only been a couple of months, but like thinking back to then, how like low I actually was and how high I am now is just like, world, it's unbelievable.
Worlds apart.
Yeah, it's like I'm a different person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really like the bit where you don't apologize for some of the things you did, because I think speaking to a lot of people with mental health complications, they always apologize.
Yeah.
But realistically, we don't need to apologize.
No, definitely not. And my thing, I've always kind of apologized and always put everybody first.
Yeah.
So for me, during my mental illness journey, I've started to learn that I am the priority, and if I don't put myself first, that it comes a lot worse than how I'm feeling at that exact point.
Yeah.
So the moment that I start to bring on everyone else's emotions on top of how crappy I'm already feeling, it just makes me 1,000 times worse.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's obviously how I reached out to you.
Yeah.
But I'm sure all the listeners and myself would like to know kind of where it started for you. I know we spoke off air, so I kind of know where it's going to go, but it'd be good to chat about that.
Yeah.
So where did it all start for you?
I kind of, like, as an adult now, like I said on the phone the other day, I kind of can acknowledge as a child having anxiety and depressive symptoms. But obviously then it wasn't really that much of a thing, so no one really kind of picked up on it. However, when, like, I was really little, my whole family just thought that I had ADHD and that I was all over the place for that reason. But now working with kids, like, I can kind of see that it was more anxiety, and the way that I kind of reacted with things and my fiddling and running around all the time and needing to not sit still or needing to, just continue to move, was more around my anxiety than around the ADHD.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I could still concentrate in classes, and anything I was actually interested in, I would sit there and do it. But it was just like that, unless I wasn't interested in it, I was like, nah, I'm too antsy, I can't sit here.
And that's a lot of kids these days.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you would see that.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of them get diagnosed ADHD even when they're not.
Yeah.
Yeah, which and really sucks.
Usually prescribed medication.
Yeah.
Which can often just mask who they are and what they're about kind of thing. So
yeah, and further any other mental illness things in their future as well.
Yeah. Is there anything in your childhood that blame's not the right word, but that, I guess,
contributed?
Yeah, contributed and had your state of mind adopt these behaviours.
Yeah.
Is the right word.
I mean, I was brought up in pretty much a single parent family. so my parents separated before I was born. So mum raised my brother and myself pretty much by ourselves. My dad's so we didn't really see much of him growing up, which sucks, but it's all right. As an adult, you come to terms with it. But as a kid, you kind of sit there like, wait, why didn't they show up? Or why aren't they interested in my life? Or why are they doing this instead of being with me? And it was just like a ripple effect of like all the things that he wasn't there for and like kind of bringing back to, well, what am I doing wrong? Why am I being excluded from my dad because I love him so much? Why doesn't he love me? And it's just like, as a kid, you don't have the right answers for it. And like, I was lucky that I had my big brother because he kind of just held me together through all of that, because my parents just hated each other all through our childhood. But, yeah, I was really lucky to have my brother through that because, yeah, he kind of would protect me from it as such.
I think that's – I've been listening to a podcast, Dr. Rogan Chatterjee, I think his name is. Share the link. But he had a – I'm in the middle of the podcast at the moment with Dr. Gavin Mate, who talks about all addictions and all mental health as such. And it always comes from something missing in childhood and it doesn't – It's not that we blame parents, blame people around us because they're doing the best with what they know.
Yeah, absolutely.
But in your case, you're missing something.
Yeah.
So
you
were trying to find that from
another
source.
Yeah.
But as children, we don't have a clue that we're doing that.
No, definitely not.
Act.
Yeah. And, like I said, I was really lucky because my brother kind of just stepped in as that male role model in my life, which was really lucky. To kind of help me still be guided.
how much older is your brother than you?
6.5 years.
So, like, I know a little bit about him because he spoke to me, but so I don't want to ask too many pointed questions, but you know, how do you think that had an effect on him? Because he did take on that father role. And it would be instinctively as a kid. That's just what
we do. Well, my brother started abusing drugs pretty heavily when he was around 17. And from there he kind of continued to use for a long time. He's clean now, which is really awesome, and he's got two beautiful girls. But, I mean, that was really hard to kind of, like, watch from the outside and not really understand, because obviously he started to distance himself and he had, like, his own friends, and when he was home he just wasn't in the mood to hang out with you or anything like that. So he kind of removed himself from, like, my childhood as such.
Did that for you feel like another male figure was disappearing?
In a way. I mean, we have started to get pretty close again now, which is really awesome. But for a while there, we kind of have been on totally different worlds. So it's been really hard for us to kind of bond that way. But we have, just started to come close again, which is really awesome. Yeah.
And that would help your mental health as well. Yeah. Because you did help raise you for the first 10, 11, 12 years of your life.
Yeah, and he kind of just understands how my anxiety works as well.
Yeah.
So, for example, like, I'll just give him a call and say, hey, I'm thinking of doing this, and he'll say, okay, but you can't look at it like this. Yeah. And you need to make sure that the way that you approach this isn't, like, looking at it from this negative side of your brain that you know that you're going to use. Like, try and look at it from a different point, which is really, it's good that we kind of know each other better on that level now, because I think now I need it a little bit more than I did before.
Yeah. So you can open up, he's really good at opening up your curiosity.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. We have a very honest relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. We just, anything that he asks is always just a straight answer, or vice versa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
Going through your childhood and teenage years, how'd it look like from an outsider's perspective? Would you kind of, that's hard because you're in it, but you know, like, if someone said, oh, this is what Sarah's like, what would they say?
It's actually really funny you say that, because I've been having this conversation for, like, the last couple of weeks, about, in high school, I kind of, in a way, was a little bit reserved with who I trusted and who I wanted to be friends with.
Yeah.
I kind of took, like, bits from each friendship group, and I was friends with a whole lot of people, but it was kind of for my own security.
Yeah.
I didn't really have, like, one strong friendship group, because I couldn't commit to being in a friendship group and, like, put all my trust into them.
Yeah.
It's just, like, I had little bits of trust everywhere, and I still do now. Like, I don't have, like I have the boys, and they're awesome, and they, like, help me so much, and they're probably the closest thing to a group of friends that I've ever had.
Yeah.
Which has been really cool. But I still, like, have all my friends scattered everywhere and have them all, not for different purposes, but for, like, different ways that I kind of deal with things.
Is that in the same thing, in the same boat? You're in fear of losing.
Yeah, in a way.
And having, like, a backup.
Yeah. Kind of plan? Yeah, in a way, definitely. Like, I definitely kind of have had that big fear inside my head, and Ash and I were actually talking about this the other day, where I, like, I'm so scared of people just leaving.
Yeah.
And it's, like, it's really hard, because I can't live like that. And when I'm, like, in a really bad space, I continue to think like that. But then when I'm in a good place, I kind of, like, pull myself together, and I'm like, you can't live your life worried about what's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just, that dark moment where you can't pull yourself out of it.
That's when the subconscious mind is just winning all ends up.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
It's really funny, because my psychologist and I have done, like, it sounds really weird, but we've, like, separated my brain into different sections, and it's, like, my negative part, my positive part, and then we call her Coach Sarah. So my negative part is Nellie, and then my positive is Patricia. So if you've ever seen, what's it called, Split? Have you seen that?
I haven't seen Split, no.
Is that what it's called? I can't remember. But it's about someone who has split personality, but it's, like, to a whole extreme where he, like, turns into, like, a monster at the end or something. And one of his names is Patricia. So we made it like really funny, but it's like trying to pull out different parts of my brain and kind of use them at certain points. So like my negative Nelly, using them when I actually need to, because obviously it's still a really important emotion, and then using Patricia when I need to, because like you need to be positive. And then there's Coach Sarah who kind of comes in and takes over and looks at it from the outsider point of view. So that was like really helpful with my brain.
That's actually, I haven't heard of that as such, but that's, I'm sure that's going to help a lot of people out there, because the most important thing I think you said out of that was you don't ignore the negative side, because that's our protective system.
Absolutely.
We can't ignore our protective systems, because if we stop doing that, then we end up doing endangering ourselves, really.
Yeah.
Physically, emotionally, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
I remember in hospital, and this is something we kind of joked about, me and a friend in there, that when you go through like a process of healing, is this little man that comes back and sits on your shoulder and says, just go back to your old ways. And I think the most important thing is, like, excuse my language, but I used to kind of say to myself, like, fuck off, you little shit.
Yeah.
And you actually make it so it's like there's a human there.
Absolutely.
And I think then it's because it brings out the inner child in you as well.
Absolutely, yeah. And I'm such a child, so I need to, like, react and deal with things like that.
And I think it's such an effective way, but people are too scared to see it like that.
Yeah. I actually had a conversation with somebody yesterday about it, and it was around this in particular, and how they're preparing for a big competition, and they kind of just said, oh, I'm like really anxious about it. And I was like, well, you should be.
Yeah.
Like it's a big thing. It's not something that you're just going to easily get over, and you're going to look at this and be like, oh, why can't I not be anxious? Like everyone needs to get anxious for things that they're feeling uncomfortable with. Yeah. If they don't, then they're not human.
Exactly. That is the most perfect way to put it. It's like, when someone in my family, when their husband died, they were older, they were walked out of the funeral proud, they didn't cry.
Yeah.
And was like, what's wrong with crying?
Yeah.
Like, someone just died. Like,
yeah, you're allowed to cry.
Yeah. And I think that's, we're like, probably now at that point where we're going back to where you can show emotion and stuff like that. And
it's absolutely. And that's something that I really try and implement, especially in like my niece's life as well. So I have a 6-year-old niece and a 2-year-old niece, and the 6-year-old, she is like this little beautiful girl, but it's like I try and encourage her to feel emotions but then walk away from it as well. So like to feel it, great, I've acknowledged it, continue, other than like the tantrum, throwing hands in the air, like really cracking it, just to try and guide her through that, because obviously when you're an adult, like you want to just crack the shits, but you can't.
And so you say we can't, but we do.
Yeah, we do. Like,
we do. And that's funny, because I've heard like a lot lately in the last couple of months that if you see someone crack the shits or have a really bad tension or get really angry, not say like why they're doing it, ask where that's coming from.
Yeah.
And if you think they're acting like a 3-year-old, that's because something happened when they were 3, which is just being like triggered. And it might be that they're lost. It might be that something's happening where they're not getting the love.
Yeah. So I used to throw really good tantrums when I was a kid, and I used to like stamp my feet all the way down the hallway and then like slam my door. If it wasn't loud enough, slam it again, and then come back out, yell at everyone, tell them I hated them, and then run back into the bedroom. Then I'd come out like 2 hours later and be like, oh, I'm all good now.
I shouldn't laugh, but I did the same thing, but I actually probably went a step further, and I used to bang my head against the corner of doors and walls. which scared my mum quite a bit, but it's
That's fair.
But I used to run, slam doors, and stamp my feet, and thought that would change things, but it never changes anything.
I mean, it made us feel better, and that's all that matters.
Exactly right. Well, I quite often had a sore head at the end.
A migraine.
I wasn't probably took a little bit, but that's why I laugh, because it just brings back a lot of memories of when I used to do it as well. So,
cats as well, and leave them on people's pillows. I hate you. I'm moving out. I'm leaving. And then in the morning, be like, did you see that note on your pillow? And Mum would be like, no, no, I don't know what you're talking about. And I'll be like, okay.
Oh, that's a good way to look at it. That's a good way to look at it.
Mum was bent and then just pretended it didn't happen.
All right, so we just had a little break. We had Monkey Steven. He was taking some photos. So he's just said goodbye as he goes to pick up someone from school.
Yeah, his daughter.
His daughter from school. I knew it was his kid, but I didn't know his daughter or something. Yeah. I didn't want to make an assumption. So we are back now, and Sarah is going to take us through gymnastics.
Yeah. So I started gymnastics when I was about 7 or 8, and that was like the only sport that kind of kept me occupied. So I had been through a lot of different sports, basketball, netball, swimming, athletics, soccer, and nothing really kind of stuck with me until I got into gym. And from there, it was kind of like a lot of, it's really bad, but it was like a little bit of psychological abuse from like when we were really young.
Yeah.
And like, I only now look at it, I'm like, oh my God, that was so bad. But it's fine. It's so fun. We're okay now. but kind of like the, because I was always told I was too tall and that I started too late to be able to like go far with gym and was never going to become anything and things like that, which really sucked. It's like an 8 and 9 year old because you're kind of like, but why?
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah. Well, as a kid, you think you can do anything and then someone tells you you can't.
Yeah. And I was like, but why? I want to do that. So I ended up moving away from that club because it just didn't work out very well.
Yeah, best option.
Yeah. And then from there, I kind of trained a lot throughout the week. So from the age of 12 through to about 17, I trained nearly every single day, which was a bit crazy, but it was really worth it because it kind of has made me grow into more resilient and understanding person. And I kind of like understand that there's a process with everything now, and it kind of guided me through the right way in a way.
So what you're saying is sport taught you a lot about life.
Absolutely And that, like, if you give up, then that's it. Like, you're not going to get it just from cracking it. Like,
yeah.
Because I was a bit of a big tantrum kind of person, and my coach and I had a very unique relationship where he was like super aggro, and I was like super annoying. And I would like nitpick and like really push his buttons, and then he would like get really angry at me, and it was always just like this vicious cycle. But it was like really fun. I saw him the other day and we spoke about it and laughed about it, and I was like, oh, have you had anyone like me like since then? He was like, no one's like you. So like, fair enough.
Individual.
That's right. I've got to make things tricky.
It's the best way to be.
Absolutely.
Teaching them stuff as well.
Right. Yeah. And I've always kind of been the athlete that if I don't believe why I'm doing it, then I'm not going to do it unless you can convince me that what you think I should do is actually going to be beneficial towards my training, then I won't do it.
Yeah.
And I will always sit there and be like, but why?
Yeah.
But why? Not a lot of people like that, but I mean.
You lock up questions.
Yeah.
You could just give up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anything else through your teenage years that sort of sticks out? You spoke about gymnastics, your friendship groups. There's obviously tantrums along the way, which you can now sort of understand and pin back.
Yeah.
To anxiety and emotion.
Yeah, really, yeah, that's right.
What it was.
yeah.
Just emotion that. Well, how would you describe that emotion to get to the point of severe anxiety?
It's really funny because I do say that. But my psychologist and I have been doing, like, I'm a very visual person, and we've been doing like this graphy kind of thing, where it's like the section in the middle is like my really good area, and when I'm like in a really good place, and we call it the Sezzy B state. And then there's like the section above it, which is like anxiety attack, like hyper, like full anxiety attack and the things that kind of trigger it. And then below is like the depressive state and the things that trigger that.
Yeah.
So I'm still like learning all of those things that trigger both of those different emotions, but like kind of learning that sometimes it is just me being sad or me just being angry or me just feeling anxious because it's something new and out of my comfort zone, not just anxiety. Yeah. I say just anxiety, but I mean like not me feeling like I'm having a panic attack. It's just something I'm looking at and I'm like, this makes me uncomfortable. And then me kind of evaluating it and going, do I need to be scared? What's happening? And then going from there. So that's been like a really good thing, a visual thing for myself that has really helped me understand those.
So that was something he drew out on the board for you?
Yeah, like on a big whiteboard. And then we just wrote out all of these different things that kind of push me either side.
Yeah.
So from my Sezzy B state, where I'm really awesome, what makes me get from there to sad or to anxious or whatever it does, and then trying to kind of find those, like acknowledge them before they start to help me deal with it better.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it doesn't get that bad.
Yeah. That's a really cool thing to do.
Yeah.
Because there is similar graphs out there, and it's basically all the same thing. You've got a top and a bottom and then a middle part, which is where ideally we want to sit most of the time, but everyone does venture down to both sides.
Absolutely, yeah.
Just what level and stuff like that.
You just got to ride the wave.
Yeah, you do. And allow, I think you got to, and you said it before, you've got to allow the emotion to come.
Absolutely.
Like it's a protective, it's a normal thing. We're human beings with emotions. We're not trees with no emotions. Although, I don't know.
They could have emotions. We don't really know. I don't speak tree. Yeah. Do you speak tree?
I don't speak tree either. I thought I did when I was a kid, but
I feel like I do because I'm a monkey, but
that's a good point. So anything else like through your teenage years that sort of sticks out for you?
Not really as such. I probably when I was in year 12, I was pretty sick. I suffer from really bad migraines.
Yep.
And I have a cyst in my brain, which they think could be related to it, but they're still not entirely sure. So from like as young as I can remember, I've always had really bad migraines. And when I was from year 10 through to year 12, I was like pretty sick and in and out of school a fair bit, which kind of had like a big impact on like my friends and feeling like I was being excluded. But like obviously in a way it's kind of like, well, the sick kid is sick, you can't hang out with her.
But it still makes you feel isolated and alone,
which is
being alone is obviously something that stemmed right from your childhood, so obviously it brings up all those emotions for you.
Absolutely.
And then you probably, I don't know, but you probably then go, why am I sick? Like, this is unfair.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to be around my friends.
Yeah. Yeah. And along with that kind of came like the depressive feelings as well.
Yeah.
Of just like the unwanted kind of stuff that you get when you isolate yourself so much. But obviously I wasn't intentionally isolating myself. Yeah. It was just the depression that came along with it.
And that can quite often happen with people who do go through illnesses. And you see a lot of people as they get older, when illness does hit them, for whatever reason, that they do start to get quite mentally unwell because they don't have the people around them, like you said, can't go to work, can't see their kids, can't whatever it might be.
Yeah.
You don't even need to be sick, I guess, these days.
Yeah.
People just shut off and sit on their phones and instead of seeing people.
Yeah, they sure do.
That's a story for another day.
Yeah.
As you left high school and got through that tough time, you spoke on the phone last week, I think it was at 19, that you were diagnosed.
Yes. So when I was 19, one of my best friends passed away. So he very suddenly just... He was riding his skateboard, fell off, cut his arm, and got an infection from his arm. And from the infection, the antibiotics that he was given, he was anaphylactic to. So he ended up passing away in the hospital, which was really I think because it wasn't like inside the box, it wouldn't have been easy regardless of how he had passed away, but it was kind of just like, how does that happen?
Yeah.
Like, and for me, I'm anaphylactic to the exact same medication. So it was really hard for me to kind of deal with it because I was like, that could happen to me like at any point if I fall off and cut my arm and go into hospital, but I'm not in a conscious state. And it was just like all of these things that kind of went through my head. But like at that time, I kind of just put on a really brave face and I kind of just tried to look after everybody because I just am such a mother hen. And I just, tried to help everyone else through that situation and then kind of just forgot to acknowledge my own emotions.
You know what it's like to feel alone, and you didn't want other people to feel alone in that moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's a natural
instinct
from your childhood.
Yeah.
If you were never alone as a child, you probably may have had the better skills of managing that mode.
Yeah.
Which is very complex at the best of times. So,
absolutely.
When it comes to a death that no one would have seen coming, like that's it might just clouds everything.
Yeah. And it was one of those ones where I was like, he to me was like one of the best friends that I've ever had, and he was just like someone that was always there.
Yeah.
And then for him to just not be there anymore, it was kind of like, hang on a second.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean? And, like, even now I'll go down because his mum passed away a year before him and his ashes are buried with her.
Yeah.
And I'll go down and visit. And, like, I still just, like, it's still hard for me to kind of understand. Like, I sit there and I now know that he's not around, but it just doesn't feel like he's gone.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I still struggle to believe it. And then I watch videos and see pictures and things, and like I laugh and I cry and I do all of that stuff because it's like obviously I really miss him and our friendship that we had, but at the same time I'm kind of like, that was so, like, it feels like so long ago. It was only 4 years ago, but it feels like a totally different life again.
Yeah
Where I just am like so much more grown now.
And you, like, you speak about this pretty openly, and like this is probably going slightly off topic, but probably not at all. Like, do you talk about him like this, like every day?
Yeah, absolutely. So I like to remember him, and I like to share stories. It kind of like brings back those really nice memories that I have. Obviously, I wasn't in the hospital when he passed away, and a lot of our friends were. So I don't have that last memory like they do. So I still kind of hold on to those really positive, happy moments that we spent together and all of the stupid things he used to do because he was just the weirdest person ever.
Yeah.
But it was awesome. That's why we're friends.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's probably why you're friends. And like, the reason I sort of went off topic there is because you do see a lot of people with death, with illness, like mental health deaths, any death, like we shut off and it's because we want to protect our emotions but other people's emotions, but realistically we still think about that, so we may as well talk about it and like remember them for what they brought to your life. Like it's really, really important to do with everyone. I spoke to a friend who knew a mother of a son who had suicided, and she her words were that she hated that people didn't talk to her about him because it was like it was forgotten. But that wasn't the case. They just didn't, people just didn't know how to talk about it.
Absolutely.
But I think it's so important that people that lose people talk about it with them.
Absolutely.
Remember, like, absolutely, you know what, they might cry, but they're probably crying at home anyway by themselves. So it's better that they're crying around people and
absolutely
stuff like that. I think that death has a mental health effect on everyone around. No matter, it doesn't matter how close you are to the person, it can affect you.
That kind of took me down like a whole new like road of mental illness. Like, it was kind of just like all of these things just hitting me at once, and for the first bit I just thought it was like me mourning and me kind of dealing with that, and then it was like 6 months later and I was like, it's like I got worse. Like, it wasn't as if it was getting any better, like it started to progressively get worse. So like 6 months was bad, 9 months was even worse, 12 months in it was just like, like I was suicidal. I didn't want to be around anymore. And I had like all of like my family and everything were just like couldn't understand it because they were kind of just like, it's you're mourning still, but why are you still mourning kind of thing?
Yeah.
And it was like trying to understand why I was.
Yeah.
And then I ended up seeing a psychologist and they diagnosed me with PTSD. And said that because it was so closely relatable to my own personal experience that the chances were that I was relating it back to myself.
Yeah.
Which like along with that came a lot of night terrors and sleep paralysis and stuff too, which really sucks because it was kind of like sleep paralysis is scary. It's so scary.
Yeah. I don't know much about sleep paralysis.
Yeah.
If you don't mind, could you explain a little bit about it? I absolutely
can. So my experience, and it was the same thing over and over and over again. And I lived in a bungalow out the back of my mum's house and it was a sliding door. And so basically your whole body feels like you can't move, but your mind's awake. So it feels like you're awake in the exact spot that you went to sleep and then you can still see everything around you, but you can't move. And then so the sliding door would open and then like this black shadow would come up on the roof all the way across, like crawling on the roof until it was above me. And then it would just drop on top of me and start strangling me. And then it would push down on my chest as well. So that was like a reoccurring thing over and over again. And I would be like screaming in my sleep. Nobody could wake me up. And it was just, it was pretty traumatic for not just me, but everyone around me as well, because they kind of couldn't help me. Like they couldn't wake me up. It was just like trying to wake me up, but I was just screaming and like there were tears running down my face, even when like I had my eyes closed.
But you're extreme pain.
Yeah.
It needed to come out somewhere.
So I kind of really struggled with sleeping, especially for that reason. So like the night terrors and the sleep paralysis kind of stopped me from sleeping because I was so scared to go to sleep. And it's like I felt so brave in the daytime and I felt like I was really like holding my shoulders high and I was really trying to take care of myself. And then it would get to night and I would just freak out. I would just say, I just don't want to go to sleep. Like, I'm so scared. I don't want it to happen again. And, like, it would just be this ongoing cycle until I kind of, like, started to get into a better headspace.
Yeah.
That it stopped. Like, they tried giving me Valiums and things like that. But obviously from my family's addictive personality past, I kind of just said no. And that I've never really wanted to use any chemical-based stuff to try and help this problem. Instead, I've just kind of dealt with it for the time being and found other ways until it has gotten better.
And I think, like, so that's like throwing me about a little bit because you see sleep paralysis in movies. You don't kind of, I've never really heard of it that extreme before. So, I'd say sorry you had to go through that, but I think I don't want to be apologise for that because I think it makes you the person you are today.
Makes me a whole lot stronger. I can go to sleep easy as now.
it is bizarre because there's probably going to be people listening that probably go through the same thing and are probably told you just need to keep pushing through or whatever. What advice would you give them?
That it seems really hard now. And it feels like it's never going to end. And regardless of if you have 1 hour of sleep, 2 hours sleep, whatever it is, just use it, have it, and just keep going because it's like it's going to eventually stop once you're in a better space.
Yeah.
And it's the side of your brain that kind of needs to feel better for you to deal with it better.
Yeah.
And like there's been a time probably about 18 months ago where I started to get it and like I just completely calmed myself down and made myself realize this is just a dream.
Yeah.
Like, you're okay, nothing is happening. And then I just went back to sleep as normal, which was like a really big step because it was kind of like, as soon as it happened, I just was laying there and I was like, no, not again, not again, not again.
Yeah.
And then I was like, it's just a dream, Sarah. You need to just chill out. Like, it's going to be okay. And then just kind of like that self talk and getting myself through it was the best thing, and seeing the psychologist really helped me as well because I just refused to have any sleeping medication.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
I So I grew up through my teenage years. I had lots of night terrors. So I every night had a devil chase me in my sleep.
Oh, wow.
Around my house and stuff. But I didn't have the paralysis.
Yeah.
I was a pretty loud sleeper anyway.
Yeah.
But one thing the psychologist said to me probably 6 years ago is treat your thoughts like a movie.
Yeah.
And pretend you're watching a scary movie in your head.
Yeah.
And it changes the perception. Yeah. And it doesn't happen.
No.
But if you keep sort of processing it, because yeah. I love scary movies, which yeah. is really yeah, bizarre when we've gone through
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
But if you treat what's going on in there like a movie,
mm.
you see it from a different perspective that
yeah,
it isn't real.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It's completely fiction.
Yeah.
It's fiction, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That test yeah. life, year 12, year 12 English out.
Yeah, me too.
So I think that's like really good advice. And, you know, medication is such a lot of research and a lot of things I've looked into recently
mm-hmm.
is where it's any medication is a short-term fix.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's never a long-term
yeah.
fix with any of these kind of things. So through that period, if you had medication which helped
yeah.
and you stopped taking the medication, it yeah. will eventually come back.
Come back, yeah.
So you work through it.
Absolutely.
In a much
yeah.
more productive way. Yeah. I'm not saying don't take medication yeah. for those yeah. people struggling. If, yeah. if it's where you're at,
yeah, yeah.
then do it.
Yeah.
I take medication, so I'm yeah, not going to sit here and yeah. say it doesn't, because it does. It,
yeah.
it does help, but...
Yeah.
We've got to understand it's still short-term.
Yeah, solution. And it's not the thing that's going to, like, straight away fix what's happening.
Yeah.
Like, and I like to really look at it this way, because I'm a bit of a hard ass in this sense, but I look at it and I go, you're in control of this.
Yeah.
And, like, now that I'm in a better headspace being on medication, like, I put in place the right things that I know are going to help me better my future. And, like, so when I do wean off my medication, that it's going to be healthy and I'm going to live a healthy life, not going to be so, I don't know the words, like, so I'm going to say intense because yeah. it was intense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but no, the medication has finally started to work for me, which is great.
Yeah, it's good. I'm just looking out the road, so there's a car smoking.
Like a full car?
Yeah, you. That you down there.
Oh, is he doing a burnout?
No, I think he just pulled in, so I don't know what's happening. Maybe he did a burnout.
Skids in Ferntree Gully.
Yeah, so we're in Ferntree Gully.
Yeah.
We're at Ninja Nation, so I'm not too worried about editing this bit out, because it's good to kind of mention that we are at Ninja Nation. Yep. I'll share the link there and
yep.
we'll talk about a little bit more about Ninja shortly.
Cool bananas.
So from what do I like? I struggle now to not understand diagnosis, but I'm not big on diagnosis
mm-hmm.
names or anything like that, which I guess you would be similar because
yeah.
we all, anxiety and depression are both feelings.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
yeah.
like
yeah.
saying someone has depression is kind of saying they're broken.
Yeah.
When realistically they don't need to be fixed.
No.
So
no.
How is being diagnosed for you with these like terminology? Because did it feel like a relief? Because that's how it felt like for me at the start.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, to be honest, I was in like full denial.
Yeah.
And I have always, like I said before, I've just been like a hard ass, and I've always just like kept my shoulders tall and like stood up for myself and always been like that strong person. So when it was like they told me that it was mainly anxiety but the depression was there as well, I was kind of like, nah. Like I remember getting home and being like, Mum, they say I have depression but I don't. Mum's kind of like, okay.
She probably can't.
Radio.
Yeah. Well, she can't turn around and say you have it, because then you're
yeah.
like.
Yeah. And at the same time, like my mum didn't really understand it either. So yeah. it was really hard for her to, how do I say it? Like, it was really hard for her to connect with me
yeah.
in that way, because she kind of, she wanted to help me, but she didn't understand what was happening. So she didn't really know the place, the things she needed to put into place to be able to help me
yeah.
like get through it.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, I was in a lot of denial at the start, and I didn't like the idea of it. Cause I think because the whole medication was thrown in my face straight away.
Yeah.
Which
like, happens
yeah,
all the time.
Yeah. Like the only reason I kind of went to the doctors was because of the sleep paralysis. And I was like, I needed it to stop. I don't know how to make it stop. I just need it to stop. And then they did the mental health test thingy mabob with me, and they ended up saying that I had severe anxiety and the medium level of depression. I don't know what the other word is. And I was kind of just like, no, I don't. I'm fine. I just can't sleep. And then it like took me a little while, and they were kind of like trying to push for me to take medication. And I was just like, no, I don't want to take medication. And I was like that from the word go. I was like, I don't want to take anything. And then it like progressively got worse and worse and worse. And then they were kind of like, you ready yet? And I was like, no, still not. What vitamins can I take? What foods can I eat to make myself feel better? How many times a day can I exercise? It was just like everything possibly that I could do. I did it to try and help me, and then it just didn't
work.
Yeah.
That happens a lot with people. Yeah. So what did the next couple of years look like through that period of time where, I guess, you were aware of what was going on?
Yeah.
You actually started to believe what was being said?
Yeah.
And, you know, what were the sort of things that did help you? And, you know, what did other people do that helped you?
I definitely noticed that I started to, like, suffer from pretty bad panic attacks a lot more often than I realized was happening. Like, I always had, like, the deep breathing, like, feeling like I was hyperventilating as such. Like, for as long as I can remember, I've had that. But it's never kind of been two and two together where I've realized that it's a panic attack.
Yeah.
And I think, like, the first thing for me figuring out that it was a panic attack was I'd gone out for dinner with a group of friends, and I have a lot of food intolerances, so I thought that it was that. And I, like, in the middle of the night, randomly woke up, vomited once, went back to bed.
Yeah.
And I ended up getting to work the next day, and I was speaking to my boss about it, and I was like, it was so weird because it was just like I don't get sick from it. Like, I never have vomited from that before. And he was kind of like, were you, like, anxious at this dinner? And I was like, yeah, there was a lot of people there.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was like, okay. And then, did you have, like, any weird dreams last night? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, you think it could have been something to do with anxiety? And I was like, oh, my God, what the hell? I was like, yeah, maybe a little bit.
But you don't want to believe it yourself.
Yeah.
And then someone points basically...
Yeah.
Writes it on your forehead.
Yeah, yeah. And then I was kind of like, oh, because, like, my boss has, like, been so supportive of everything with my mental illness. And, like, it's a husband and wife, and they just were really, really awesome through, like, my entire journey, because I started working at the gym, like, 4 months prior to my friend passing away. Yep. So they kind of saw the me before.
Yeah.
And then they saw the me that was mourning. They saw, like, this whole, like, level of different me's.
Yeah.
And they kind of just have guided me and helped me through, because they can still see the good in me. Like, there were times where I would have just been like, Sarah, leave. Like, you're being a brat. Go away.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they didn't. They just stood by me, which was really awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's – I thought you were going to go somewhere with that.
But, I was.
like, it is awesome that they do that. And, like, well, how does that set you up for life? Because at a time where someone could have pushed you away, they didn't. Mm-hmm. Where if they did push you away right now, you probably wouldn't be where you are.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. So they definitely helped me kind of be guided in the right direction. Like, they made me one of their team leaders that kind of oversaw a lot of things in the programs and things like that. But they also, like, really helped with, like, who I am as such.
Yep.
Like, so their values, their business are to be considerate and things like that, that kind of have now been implemented into, like, my everyday life.
Yeah.
And I just, it makes me kind of be more considerate of people's emotions and things that are happening around me, and rather than just judging it, like, as I see it.
Yeah.
It's kind of helped me look at, like, everything differently.
I'm very curious.
Yeah. Why. Yeah. 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 And especially because, like, working with kids as well, like, there'll be a time where a kid comes in and is just in the worst mood, and you have to just try and observe from the outside so you don't create anything worse to see, like, kind of what's happening.
Yeah.
Because obviously, like, it's my job to keep them safe. So if, like, I notice that something's off, I kind of need to, like, carefully pick at it to see what's happening and make sure that everything's okay. And, like, in a way it's good and it's bad because I do it with everybody now.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of like, are you taking on too much again, Sarah? Like, all these emotions. And I'm like, yeah, probably. But I can't help myself.
At least you know now, though.
Yeah.
Which is huge.
Yeah. And, it's really good because my friends now, I'll be sitting there and it'll get to the point where I'm just like, all right, I've had enough now, and I'll get up and walk away. And they're like, what? I'm like, too much people time. I need my own time now. And I just get up and leave. And they're all like, all right. And then, like, at the start, they were kind of like, what the hell?
Yeah.
And I was like, nope, it's too much. We've spent, like, the last 78 hours together. I can't do it anymore. I need to leave. They're like, okay.
And, you know, I bet you there's other people in that group that probably want to do the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
But are too scared of what might come back their way.
Yeah.
People naturally.
Yeah.
And it's like they feel rejected because someone's not there.
Yeah.
But so they get defensive or they get.
Mm.
It's like. It's probably where, I don't know what it's like with females, but I know when guys, with someone like Phantoms at a nightclub or something, you cop abusive messages.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm allowed to leave.
Yeah, right?
So,
yeah.
And like I was probably a bit similar to you, I explained it to them that this is what I need to do.
Yeah.
And then when that happens,
how
supportive are they?
Oh, they're so awesome. Like it all started from, like, there was a few different times, but I didn't really understand it yet.
Yeah.
So it was really hard for me to explain it to other people. Like, because everyone would always say, like, how can I help? Like, what can I do? And I was kind of always just like, I don't know. I don't know how you can help me. I don't know what to do. If I did, then, like, I wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm trying to find the reason and the things that will help me. So when I know, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
And, it, like, we had, like, a family dinner every Wednesday night with, like, our little ninja gymnastics crew. And we were sitting there and, like, it was not even anything big, and something was just said and I just cracked and I was like, I need to leave. I need to go. And then I just, like, put on my jumper, grabbed my stuff, and I left. And then I sent everyone a message and I was like, look, I'm sorry that I didn't say goodbye. I just needed to kind of get out of that situation because at this point in time, like, my brain can't really handle things like that when it gets to that point. Not that it was anything big. I was just in a bad place and something tiny would be said. And it was kind of like very sarcastic, like friends, like having little sarcastic jokes between each other. And I'm kind of like, I can't deal with this.
Yeah. But that's the best thing
for
that situation is being leave for it gets worse.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
So it's a protective
instinct
now, which is I do that as well. You leave situations before.
It gets bad because I don't really want to blow up and I don't really want my friends and my family to be in the situation where, like, they have to kind of deal with my behaviour as such. I say my behaviour, but, like, the repercussions of, like, my anxiety attack or my depressive symptoms, like, it's just always, like, going to be one or the other, and it's better that I walk away and stop it before it happens.
And I think the perfect thing to do.
Yeah.
We should all do it.
Yeah.
But also understand that when someone is walking away, that they're not doing it for themselves. So let's just let
it's
them.
It's not a personal thing.
Yeah. It never is. It's not a gate. It's about the internal of the person that is walking away.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's where the power of the other is so important.
Yeah.
It's just going,
they've
walked away.
Yeah.
Even if you, like, might say something and then they kind of react a little bit, that's when you go, oh, shit, okay.
Yeah.
Keep your mouth shut.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another day, this is what I'm saying is probably going to be perfectly fine.
Yeah.
But today, no.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm really lucky to have Ash because he's really supportive of my little tantrums, I call them, of me just kind of like cracking and going, no, I need to leave. And he's kind of like, okay. Like, I've done, like, little sly ones where I'm like, oh, I need to go home and do this. And he's like, okay. And then we get home and I, like, sit there and do a puzzle or something. He's like, you're not doing that thing you said. And I was like, yeah, but I need to get out of there. And that was the only way I could do it.
Yeah.
And he's kind of like, okay, then.
Yeah.
Whatever.
So is that it until we'll start speaking about the last 9 to 12 months?
Yeah.
That's it?
I'd say so.
I mean, there's a lot more to your life.
I'm
sure we could speak for hours and hours and hours.
Absolutely.
About certain situations and
stuff
like that. But what has happened in the last sort of 12 months, like you spoke about in this Facebook post, like that you went through a period of time in denial?
Mm-hmm.
What?
I kind of,
I don't really know how it kind of started, and I'm still trying to figure out where it kind of came from, because it came from nowhere.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if that's normal or whatever, but I like, it kind of just started to happen, and I was like, why do I feel like this? Yeah. But I look at it now, and I think that because I moved about 40 minutes away from my mom, and I moved in with a friend, and like, I love living out there, and I love like living with a friend and all of that. But I think it was like a new environment, plus I started ninja, so it was a new sport that I don't like failing at.
That's like the worst thing in the world, to want to do a ninja, because you fail 98% of the time.
Yeah, right? So I was like, this plus moving into a new place and kind of not having, like, it was all me. I moved out of home and left mum, but kind of not having that, like, support there all the time, which is what I wanted. I wanted to be able to stand on my own two feet and kind of take care of myself better. And, like, I feel like at the same time it was kind of like an error.
Yeah, an educated error.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, so I think that might have had a bit to do with it. But, yeah, like I said, I'm still trying to nut it out and figure out where it kind of came from. But it was, yeah, it was just out of nowhere where I kind of just started to feel sad again. And it was like we spoke about this about a week or two ago, where I got excited for something, and I don't remember the last time prior to that I had been excited to do something or to go somewhere or to hang out or whatever it was. And like, that for me was like a big shock, because I'm just such an excitable person and I love life and I love doing so much stuff and like kind of taking care of myself. And for me to not be excited for something, I was like, hang on a second.
Yeah, this isn't right.
Yeah. And I just thought it was like an adult thing. Like, you don't get excited for things anymore because you're growing up and like you're becoming an adult. And then I was, now I'm like, no, don't ever stop being excited for stuff.
I think that's our social norm now.
It's
got to be boring when
we're
all about all kids.
Yeah.
Until the day we die.
Yeah.
And we've got to embrace those things.
Yeah, like absolutely.
In hospital, and you mentioned puzzles before.
Yeah.
But you strip back to the basics.
Yeah.
Connect with other people.
Yeah.
Talking face-to-face.
Yeah.
You do puzzles.
Yeah.
Do art.
Yeah.
You play games. You do trivia.
Yeah.
And it is so much fun.
It's so awesome.
It's better because sometimes it's very inappropriate.
Yeah.
So you laugh and and all it is you're being a kid. You're going back to the stuff he did as a kid.
Yeah.
And like, too much of us don't do these things.
Yeah, absolutely. And see, I kind of probably about, it was after like myself going into hospital and having like all of that stuff happening, that I pulled myself away and like removed social media from my phone. And like, I say remove, but I kept it there and turned off all notifications. So I just made it that I would view it when I was ready to look at it. And if it was that important and they had my phone number, they would call me.
Yeah.
If they couldn't get hold of me, they'd call Ash.
Yeah.
Or whatever it was. Just so I kind of prioritized what I was putting my energy towards.
Yeah.
And then most recently I've been making the rule that I'm not allowed on my phone an hour before bed and an hour once I wake up. So just to kind of like ground myself a bit and to be really aware of my surroundings and make sure that like I kind of do the things I need to do before I sit down and look at my phone, because it doesn't matter that much.
Yeah, it doesn't.
And I feel like our lives have revolved around it so much, and I just kind of have taken a massive step back from it to be more invested in my own health.
Yeah.
Because I think it has so much more of an effect on lives than we all kind of think.
Yeah, I think everyone knows it.
In denial.
I think the easiest thing for us to do is pretend like it's not a problem, because it's too hard to actually change it.
Yeah.
It's like any addiction. Once you stop doing something, you have to face your emotions.
Yeah.
Which no one likes.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
what social media is looking at things and trying to find like highs from it. Basically,
I don't know what like it is for me, because I feel like I like to the point like I'm looking at things that don't make me happy.
Yeah.
And like I ended up unfollowing a whole bunch of people because I was like, you know what, I don't need to see that. And it was things like supermodels, like I don't need it.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't matter so much for me, because like I'm not invested in being a supermodel. I don't really care about it. I don't care about fashion that much.
Are you sure about the Nandos you just ate? Like.
I'm good. Couldn't give up my Nandos.
Exactly. Yeah.
But so it was like things like that that I was kind of following that I knew had such a negative impact on my life, but without me kind of doing anything about it. Like I still do, like I look at people like that and I applaud them to be able to do stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I applaud that they have followed their passions and done things to help their careers and stuff like that. But that's just not my path. So just kind of unfollowing the people that weren't a part of my journey and a part of my path to making myself better.
Yeah.
Which I like would have an open conversation with anyone about as well if they kind of came to me and were like, you unfollowed me. Like, yeah, well, you're not in my path, sorry.
it's really funny you bring this up because there's been a fair bit of Facebook group discussions within my life lately, mm-hmm. and people being upset, being removed from groups.
Yeah.
And it's very, very interesting. And I kind of haven't wanted to speak about it lately because I don't want to rub people out the wrong way. But I'm really passionate about this, so I promise to swear, but I probably will.
Yeah.
But stop fucking living in social media, Facebook groups, right. And live in real groups and communities.
Yeah, right.
And now I think this is like important because we're all talking about communities and the impact it's had on your life.
Yeah.
But seriously.
Yeah.
It's fucking social media.
Yeah. It doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't. It really, really doesn't.
Like if you want to use your phone, pick up your phone and call somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what I've really struggled to do. But when I do it, like when you started calling me and I was calling you, like that was really hard for me. I had a lot of anxiety around that. Yep. But as soon as I met you, it felt like a lot more natural. Whereas you're sitting someone talking on the screen all the time, you still like, feel really, strange
like
about
weird,
it.
Like, hello.
Yeah, you feel like a stalker or a creeper rather than actually like a connection there.
Yeah, And I feel like it's always going to be hard at first, but it's like that first step.
Yeah.
And like it's all this little stuff that really kind of helps you not become better but become more aware of the things that are triggering you the most and how you can kind of deal with them.
Yeah.
So like I used to hate calling people as well. Yeah. Like I hated it. I still now I don't even like calling up to order pizza or something. Like I'm like, can we just like put it in on like menu log or something? Like do we really have to call?
I still do that.
Yeah.
I'm still not at that stage where I call up.
And like working in like customer service and things like that, like having to call people is like I have to like stop, take a deep breath, and then like remove myself from other people because it's not that I'm embarrassed of it. It's kind of like I don't want to say the wrong thing, and I feel like as soon as there's people around me, I'm going to say the wrong thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to be distracted, and it's like these million and one thoughts about like what I'm going to do wrong.
Oh, my brains are so fun, aren't they?
They're so harsh.
So let's speak about Ninja, communities, and the impact it has on you, like every day. And I'll say it, like seeing your stuff, and I spoke about this on the phone, like it's so powerful and inspiring for me to see females.
Yeah.
And like I used, probably a couple of years ago, I used to hate like speaking about this because people think I'm creepy or trying to pick them up or whatever, because that's apparently what we're doing these days. But I genuinely look at it and like go, strong females, like how awesome is this? Because we've grown up, and this is generational thing that females stay at home, cook dinner and all that. But we're so far beyond that.
Absolutely.
But so many people aren't.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like, it's really cool because do you know Olivia Vivian?
Yes.
So she's a good friend of mine, and she has been like, in the beginning, it was kind of like, oh, I really want to compete against this chick because, like, she's so strong and she's so awesome and I just really want to compete against her. And then, like, meeting her and getting to know her and hanging out with her all the time. Well, I say all the time, but it feels like all the time. I've known her for, like, a year.
The way you talked about it was like you knew her from gymnastics when you were seven.
No. But she is just like such a powerful person in like making you feel like you're just as awesome as her. Like you look at her and you're kind of like, oh man, you're so good. And she's like, yeah, so are you. That's amazing. And like she'll always like bounce it back to make sure that you're still feeling empowered as well.
Yeah.
And like I feel like athletes like that just are so much more empowering because they want people to do sport. They want people to kind of feel happy in sport and like healthy. Cause like, I think we always forget that, like, we look at elite athletes and we just think that like their everyday schedule is like training, eating, sleeping, training, eating, which a lot of the time it is.
But say, then, what are you doing today? Pretty much, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. But the best part is, like, I think we tend to forget about, like, that social side in between as well, where we kind of have such strong people surrounding us that empower us to be better athletes. Like, even the boys as well, like, they included me so much. Well, they were the only reason that I started it, to be honest. Like, they just convinced me to do a team comp with them one time because they needed a female. And I was kind of like, nah, I don't really want to do this. Like, I'm going to be bad at it. And they were like, nah, you'll be really good. It'll be fine. And then we ended up doing it and I got the fastest female time of the day. So it was kind of like, oh, I'm not that bad at this. And so they kind of like pushed me to be better and kind of helped me with that, which was really cool too. So I'm really lucky to have like boys who I think they've been empowered so much, especially by their mums.
Yeah.
Because like their mums are just so awesome. Okay. And I think that has made them more accepting of females as such.
Yeah.
And like helps them kind of want to push the girls as much as they want to push the boys, which is, it's really cool to kind of see from the outside as well.
Who are these boys? Let's name them.
So we have boys. Ashlyn, Herbert, Charlie Robbins, Zach Stoltz, and Troy Cullen.
Four of them. Troy's the dirty one, isn't he?
Yeah, he's so dirty.
That was his thing on
his Instagram. He's so gross.
So
he freaks me out. He's gross. I'm just kidding.
So people might know all four of them from Ninja,
yeah.
Warrior, Australia. Charlie won last season.
Yeah.
Ashlyn is your boyfriend.
He is.
For nearly a year.
Yeah, about that.
Yeah. So you mentioned him a couple of times in here, so we will explain who he is a little bit to people.
Yeah.
Zach made the final last year as well.
Yeah. Him and Ash fell in the same stage.
Yeah.
But, like, I think Zach got further than Ash.
Yeah. So we'll mention that definitely on here.
Yeah.
Zach will probably like that.
He'll love it. He'll be so happy with me.
I know, like, I spoke on the phone to you about how intimidating it is going in there, but that's my issue.
Yeah.
Because what I see from them and all of you girls, like we spoke about Danielle Thompson now.
She's awesome.
Yeah, it's like they're all actually all very, very supportive people.
Absolutely.
And help anyone that walks in.
Yeah.
And you see it when they work with the kids and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, as we know, as you would know, Melanie, Ashlyn's like pretty giant, cruisy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he's still,
yeah.
If you asked him for help, he would.
Yeah, absolutely. Help. Yeah. So, yeah.
What's that been like for you as a relationship, but also Ninja? And
it's actually like, as Mum and I were talking about this morning, actually. and like, in a way, Ash and I are really different, but very similar. And we kind of help each other in the times where like my extreme, bubbly, crazy personality comes in hand with his like not so crazy, like more chill side, where he'll kind of pull me up and be like, chill out. And I'm like, yeah, all right. And then I'm like, other times, be excited. This is amazing. And he's kind of like, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's really good because in that sense, we kind of balance each other out. And in the times where, like, obviously with my panic attacks, he's kind of been the person, like the main person there that's kind of helped me calm down.
Yeah.
Which has been, so awesome. Like, I just can't explain it.
Yeah, because you probably didn't expect it. You don't expect it because you probably never had something like that before.
No, definitely not.
Yeah. So that is like something.
Yeah.
Because you probably, I don't know, but you might have gone into it like going, oh, no, is he going to judge me for this? Oh, no, is he going to run away?
Yeah.
So when it actually happens, it does really help.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really hard for us as well because we've been friends for years.
Yeah.
And we ended up getting together and we didn't really tell anybody. We kind of just hid it from everyone for a couple of months until we kind of decided that we were ready to tell people.
Yeah.
Which all our friends knew, like they could see it. It wasn't as if like we were trying to fool anybody, but like at the same time, we kind of kept it to ourselves until we were ready to fully commit to each other, but also let everyone else know. Like, he's got a lot of social media followings, and he's got a lot of people that speak to him on a regular basis. And it, like, for me, like, being Ashlyn's girlfriend has never really been something I've wanted as such.
Yeah.
Like, I love him to death, and I am so happy to be with him. And it's like, for me, I've always just wanted, like, my own identity.
Yeah.
And making sure that it's never come out as, oh, this is Ashlyn's girlfriend.
Because he wouldn't want that either, though.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
He would hate that.
Yeah.
I can imagine. You can kind of see that, even he would be like, no, this is Sarah.
Yeah.
Sarah is an individual human being.
Yeah. And it's really funny because people will be like, this is Ashlyn's girlfriend. I'm like, my name's Sarah. And I'll like shake their hand. My name is Sarah.
Yeah. And that's
not Ash's girlfriend. I have a real name.
I am a real person.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, what is that? Because you talk about that being a big step. What is that like for you, that people probably recognize him and people probably do go to him?
At the start, it was like a bit like, whoa, like I didn't realize it was that intense, because like we would hang out as friends all the time, and I would see things that would happen. We'd be like at a club, or we'd be like walking down the street and people would recognize him. But until you're with him all the time, and then you will go out for dinner and someone will come and tap him on the shoulder and say, hey, can I get a photo with my kid? And he's kind of like, okay, like he's too polite to say like, can I at least finish my dinner? And they're kind of like, can you take a photo with my kid? And he's like, oh yeah, okay. And it's like, it's a bit intense. Like, we have to be in the right mind frame to leave the house. Like, we have this joke, because the peninsula is just so crazy that, like, from where we live in it, like, it all the way through until you get to Mornington, it just is like, it's fine. And then once you get past Mornington to like Frankston, and then like further through to the city is when people start to like really come in and like give you so much attention. And we're like, okay, are we ready for this today? Are we ready for a Frankston kind of day, or are we ready for a city kind of day? I think
anyone needs to be ready for a Frankston kind of
day. Yep.
Well, enough about him. Let's talk about Ninja Nation.
Yeah.
The compound.
Yeah.
And I'll put links in the show notes for these places as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they are, I mean, you work at both places.
Yeah.
But how much does it help you mentally and with life?
With like my training, do you mean, or with work?
Everything.
So for me, like, I've only been at Ninja Nation for about a month or two now, so I haven't really had, like, a lot of my mental breakdown-y stuff here yet. Soon to come. Keep updated, everybody. It'll happen soon. But, like, Clem and even the, like, my bosses from Peninsula Gymnastics, they have been so supportive of everything, which has been really awesome. Like, for me, driving is like one of my main triggers, which is really weird because it also calms me as well. So it's like I have from one extreme to the other, where I'll either be like really freaked out over the idea of driving and I get really bad anxiety over it, or I'll go for a drive to calm myself down.
Yeah.
And there's like no in between.
It's pretty bizarre.
Yep. But like, there'll be times where I like have had to just call Clem and be like, look, I'm really sorry, but I can't drive myself in.
Yeah.
Like, because it's an hour and 15 drive. Like, I'll go, well, Ash is going to be coming in later, so I'll try and find a way to get there, and then I'll just come home with him later. Because like, I don't want to stop like my work, because me working makes me really happy and I love like coaching. So at the same time, I'm like stuck in between this place of like, how can I get there? How can I make it happen so I can actually like do the thing I enjoy doing?
Yeah.
And like, they've been just so supportive of that. And like Beck and Tim, they just, whenever I kind of was in a really bad place, they'd just be like, yep, no problem, no stress. We'll sort everything out here. You do what you need to do. And that was it. And it was like we'll call you tomorrow and see how you're doing. And it was like following up phone calls, like the babysitters and the people that were calling in all the time. Like that was mostly Beck from the gym. She would like call me pretty much every single day just to check in to see how I was going. And like at that time, I felt bad because I couldn't stick with my role that I was in. And I felt like I was just letting everybody down. And it was like really hard for me to answer the phone, but I still did because I knew she was ringing as a friend, not as my boss. And like regardless of like the tone of my voice when she would be on the phone to me, like she still just stopped to try and understand everything going on around me, not just what she could see. Which was really awesome, especially with like the recovery side of it, because like when I crash hard, and it's like a week or two that I'm in bed. And then it's like when it was like really bad last year, it was like 4 weeks in bed, and it was like it just wasn't getting any better. And she would be like, "Do you want me to come over? Like, can I bring you anything? Like, what's happening?" And it's kind of like relieving to have that support from your employer. That's I can't even like describe how amazing that is.
Well, it's because you're worried that you're letting people down, that you're going to lose your job.
Yeah.
And the other parties, you actually feel like you're letting them down.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think when you get good employers like that,
and
I guess good people like you, they understand that if someone else was in this scenario that you're in, you would be the first one to go, "I'll cover it.
Yeah.
I'll stand up.
Yeah,
and I'll
absolutely.
Do it
yeah.
for them." And I think when people see that, and I only know you briefly, but I know if Clem called you and said something's happened, we need you to come in.
Yeah,
you'd go, "Oh, no worries." Like,
if you absolutely, could
actually do it, you'd drop what you needed to do.
Absolutely.
That makes a massive difference, and that comes down to you and your values and stuff like that. So you got to take a fair bit of credit from that.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. It's one of those tricky ones where you kind of like you look at it and you're like, "Oh, I did all of these things and it was so wrong of me," but then you forget to kind of stop and acknowledge the things that you did well. And you just really forget about that stuff that is like really important, that you need to continue to celebrate those wins.
Yeah. Because they're massive.
They are. They're at that point in time, they are enormous.
You don't want to get out of bed.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you get out of bed, it's like, "Yes, I made it to the couch."
You're doing exactly the same thing, but you walked that far, which is huge. Yeah.
"Yes, I had a shower today." Poor Ash.
Don't worry, I'm exactly the same. That's when I know, and I think that's the thing, we need to recognize these things we're doing, whether they're disgusting or whether they're hurting others.
Yeah.
Because if we recognize them when they start to happen again, we can actually start to pull ourselves up.
Yeah.
I know
when
I don't shower, I know I'm slipping.
Yeah.
So it's like my first telltale sign.
Yeah.
Just get yourself in the shower every morning and then whatever happens from there.
Yeah. That's like definitely something one of my friends, Betsy. Do you know Betsy Burnett?
I've seen Betsy.
Yes.
Disco ninja.
Yeah. So she came down and stayed with me back in October, it would have been. And she kind of like said something and I was like, "Oh yeah, that makes sense." Like she was like, "I'm excited to get home and be back in my routine."
Yeah.
And I was like, "A routine? I don't have a routine." And I just like sat there and I was like, "What's my routine? Do I actually have one?" And it was like, "No, you don't."
Yeah.
"Create a routine." And then that like helped me as well. So it was like, get out of bed, have a shower, brush your teeth. Like, come out to the kitchen. If you're hungry, make some breakfast. Like, and it was like all of these steps that now I do every single day.
Yeah.
And like, I've now started to add little things in, like your alarm goes off, get up, go for a run.
Yeah.
Come back, have a shower, brush your teeth.
So you're slowly building on the routine.
Yeah.
But just you nail it before you add.
Yeah.
Sounds really straightforward.
Yeah.
But it's not.
It's not. It's definitely not. And just like picking like three things a day that you just want to accomplish each day. Like number one, getting out of bed. Like number two, eating breakfast.
Yeah.
Number three, making dinner. Like they were like my three things that I just made sure I did every single day just to make sure that number one, I was eating.
Yeah.
Because I just wouldn't eat. I just stopped eating. And number two, I was trying to be productive.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of like trying to take care of myself, be independent.
Did it have a flow-on effect though as well? Like when you started to do, like you got up, had a shower, but you actually did stuff without even kind of thinking about it?
Yeah.
Just like it flows. When you get that first thing in, you just kind of, you've got time as well.
Yeah.
you don't realize.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of people that go through this, and we've probably both been through it at stages, you sleep most of the day.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, day's gone anyway, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
So you don't do anything. Whereas if you get up early, do your shower.
Yeah.
And even if you go to bed an hour later, at least you've got an hour of stuff done.
Yeah.
But you would not before.
So. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I wake up tired every morning anyway, so I may as well just actually be tired.
Well, if you don't wake up tired, everyone wakes up tired.
Mm.
You just woke up.
Yeah.
So right? Everyone's like, I'm so tired in the morning. I'm like, oh, sure, you just woke up.
Yeah.
It's actually very normal because I'm the same. And you're like,
it's just pushing past it.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And eventually, Mel Robbins, Tony Robbins' wife, I remember watching a video of her countdown like a rocket ship.
Yeah.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then you bounce out
and
of bed.
And then get out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If you do that enough times, you just bounce out
it's
of bed.
It's just natural. Yeah.
And then whatever happens from there, happens from there.
Yeah.
Don't even think about what's next.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just take off.
Yeah. I did watch this really cool, I can't remember who it was, but it was like a TED talk or something. And it was like, have one thing a day that you need to do, and the one thing should be make your bed.
Yeah.
And it was around like, well, even if you have a really shit day, at least you're coming home to a nice bed.
I've watched that one. It was an army guy.
Yeah. And like, I like that. I never make my bed, but I really liked it because it would like just gave value to one thing.
Yeah.
And for me, the one thing is having a shower.
Yeah.
Or brushing my teeth.
Yeah.
Or doing something that's like that one thing I do every single day that I'm proud of doing.
Yeah.
And then it just like slowly grows into more and more and more things that I do each day that I'm proud of doing.
Yeah.
Like being able to drive here.
We'll quickly touch on Free Hearts.
Yeah.
What's Free Hearts?
So I started Free Hearts in 2016 for Beyond Blue first. So raised the $10,000 for Beyond Blue. And then I kind of, after that, it was like a massive come down from it, to be honest. It was like I did this massive event, had like 143 people attend it, 3-course meal, like drinks and everything provided, and it was like silent auction, live auction, raffle, like there's everything was happening. I had fire twirlers, stilt walkers, like anything I could think of, I made it happen. And like afterwards it was just like this massive crash, and it just like went on for so long, and I just looked at Free Hearts and I was like, I don't want any part of it right now. Like I can't do it. And I think because like that event was so successful, there was already that expectation from everybody else that it was going to continue to stay like that.
Yeah.
And I think that expectation on me was just like what kind of pushed me down a little bit more with Free Hearts, and me just going, I don't want anything to do with it. Like, I don't want a bar of it. And like, I kept paying for like the business registration to just keep going over. And then last year I purchased my friend's photo booth. So there's the two photo booths, and I purchased both of them off her and put it under Free Hearts as a business. So then that way I could kind of still give back where I want to, but without taking that massive toll on me, where it's like I am like providing a service as such, and then like I still don't have the money to pay my bills, or I don't have the fuel to cover the cost of the things that I had to drive to and pick up and all of that stuff. So instead I kind of turned it around to make it something that was going to be viable, but I could still
give.
Yeah, I could still give, and without taking away from my own mental illness.
Yeah.
Because that was like the main thing for me, which is why I walked away from it in the first place, was I was like, that was just too much. And I organized it in like under 6 months. Like, it was such a massive event that I kind of just like looked at from May, and we had it in November.
Yeah.
And I just went, okay, yeah, let's do this. That's going to be easy. And it was like there were three of us, and like between their own mental illness and their own mourning of friends that had passed away from suicide, it was just like this thing that was kind of just left to me.
Yeah.
To organize like by myself. And it was kind of just I was studying full time, like working permanent part time. So it was like on top of that, like, how the hell do I make this work? How do I, like, people have paid $100 for a ticket for this. Yeah. Like, I can't let them down. They need to do this. And it's like, yeah, I was kind of just like, I need to make a way for it to work.
Yeah.
In with my head.
Yeah. So you're still creating awareness. You're still giving back money and funds and stuff like that. But you're much better place to do that.
Yeah.
Which I think we're slowly getting to the way. There's still a lot of people out there who think people that help shouldn't get money, but the fact is everyone helps.
Absolutely. With everything you do. Yeah.
You landscape someone's yard, you're helping with their house.
Yeah.
So
and in a way as well, like the cleaning of a house, the landscape of a house, like that stuff kind of all comes back down to like your brain as well. Like if all of that stuff is cluttered and messy and all of that, like it makes everything in here crazy, cluttered, messy. So in a way we're all kind of giving back to make sure that we function.
Yeah.
And that we function well.
Yeah.
So like I was really hesitant about it to begin with. And I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. Cause mum had kind of said it to me from the beginning. She was like, you could make a business out of this. And I was like, nah, don't want to make a business. Yeah. I want it to be just purely charity. And then trying to set it up as a not-for-profit as well, like with like an accountant and stuff, it was just impossible. It was so hard. Like every accountant I went to just like wiped their hands and said, nah, we're not helping you.
It's so hard.
And I was just like, okay.
You need a lot of patience.
Yeah. So, and like I even like studied it for like weeks and weeks and weeks and like had printouts, like studying, highlighting, looking through everything to see how I could make it work. And I couldn't figure it out. So I was like, what do I do? I don't know.
So what is it now? You hire out 2 photo booths?
Yeah. So I have 2 photo booths, and then hire them out to parties, festivals, things like that to then, raise funds. So then I do 10% of the profit from each booking goes to Headspace.
Yeah. And that's just in the Mornington Peninsula area?
Nah, all through the city as well.
All through the city?
Yeah.
Right. It's on my website. So if anyone wants to check that out,
they
can check that out and hire a photo booth because some of it will go back to a good cause. And everyone loves a photo booth when they've had a few froffies.
Absolutely.
I personally am not a big fan, but...
What?
Never been a big fan of photo booths.
Oh my goodness.
But everyone else is.
Yeah, so. But I have like a Spider-Man like face mask.
And yeah, maybe you can tell me to get excited as well.
Yeah.
Like, and I'll maybe that.
Yeah, like, there you go. I'll just give you like a couple of the props and then you'll be like, all right, this is fun.
I saw that out one time. What's the last sort of question? Does the future, what can you tell me, what can you tell on podcast that you're allowed to, is going to happen in the future for you?
I mean, obviously, like, so this year I kind of, like I finished up at the gym last year, so I could concentrate more on my ninja journey and wanting to compete interstate and internationally as well. So hopefully that goal for me kind of can come true. And just trying to encourage like the next generation to be healthy and to help like guide them in the right direction to better their future and to follow sports regardless of what sport it is. Just to get involved with something and make sure that they're doing what they love to do.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll see how I go with my ninja journey. Hopefully it's a good one. But I mean, training a whole lot, so we'll see what happens.
Sarah's got a couple of rips on her fingers, which if you don't understand ninja, rips are where the skin peels right off.
You can take a photo if you like and put it on there.
Yeah, it's absolutely disgusting, this one too.
Yeah, it's manky ass.
It's one of the real fun ones. Is it continually teaching kids and working with kids that you want to do?
Yeah. That I feel like that for me is like the main reason behind why I do what I do. Like I like to have a why for everything and just an understanding about why we do things, because if you don't understand it and you don't know why you're doing it, then why the hell are you doing it? And I think for me, like I get involved in sport and ninja specifically and gymnastics as well, because I want the next generation of athletes and like kids to love what they're doing and enjoy what they're doing and have somebody that can kind of guide them in the right direction.
Yeah.
Like I feel like there's a lot of coaches out there that don't yet have the right knowledge to be able to guide every single athlete and help them, which I definitely don't have yet. But obviously just trying to be accepting of so many different kids and understanding how they kind of operate to try and guide them in the right direction with their future.
So if kids want to train with you, they just need to book in at Ninja Nation and all the content.
Yeah.
So Ninja Nation is on Infantry Gully, where we are now, on Burwood
Highway.
And the compound training facility is in Bayswater on Canterbury Road.
Yes, that's it.
I'll put the links up on the show notes and put them on the website. May as well put them on my website as well.
Absolutely.
Good places to go, good communities to go. I've been the compound. I was definitely no Sarah. Sarah will probably show me up. Definitely at the moment. I'll work on it. That might be my aim. Be better than Sarah one day.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. You should have come back like 6 months ago when I had a dislocated arm.
I would have smashed it then. Yeah. Hopefully. Well, good luck. Thank you for sitting down with me.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It was a really good chat. It was an hour and a half.
We did an hour and a half.
Yeah, it was an hour and a half. So we were actually a bit worried about time, but
Jeevers.
It just kind of flew by, which is really good.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people will get something out of it. So
awesome.
If there is any feedback from people, feel free to send it through my email and I'll pass it on to Sarah. Her details are obviously there as well, but reach out to Free Hearts, book yourself a photo booth. But I think we'll leave Sarah with a final message to everyone out there about their mental health. No. I've thrown her under the bus here.
It's totally thrown me under the bus. I think just like, I know in this moment it really sucks and it feels like it's never going to end, but it's always going to get better regardless of like how you feel at this point. And like acknowledging the way you feel is really important, but just remembering that it's always going to get better. And that it's gonna continue to grow and you're gonna come out stronger each time.
So.
Yeah. Woo!
Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Power, Strength and Vulnerability, the Mental Health Podcast. If anything in this podcast has brought up difficult feelings, please call Lifeline on 13 1144. For any further information, or if you want to bring your story to life, contact Shane at shane@vitalityfit.com.au. That's VITALITYFITT.com.au.